Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, October 16th, 2017. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I am good. I'm very good. It's very good to be here, and thank you.
I'm glad that you're very good. When you started saying you were good, you sounded a little trepidatious. By the time we got to the end, I fully believe you. So,
you know, I was debating whether or not to get into a full-scale explanation of why it is that it was taking me a moment to actually answer your question and hit the mute button.
And that's okay. We'll keep the mystery because that's what keeps things in a relationship exciting. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm good. No explanation necessary.
None necessary at all. All right. Although we probably do need an explanation for crack. And I'm not talking about the magical feed for chickens. Boy, do they love that stuff. Nor am I talking about the highly addictive drug. I'm talking about the new security flaw for WPA2 in Wi-Fi that has just been announced. So the quick version is there is a flaw in WPA2, which is part of the encryption system that we're using on Wi-Fi, that allows it to be hacked in such a way that whatever data that's passing through the Wi-Fi network using WPA2 encryption could potentially be decrypted and read by whoever wanted, which is kind of creepy. And since this is not something that's device specific, because it's in the way WPA2 works, this means that pretty much any device that has Wi-Fi capability and WPA2 encryption is potentially vulnerable to this threat. Did I get that right, Dave?
You did. And it's just to kind of take it up to 10,000 feet. The default high security on your router, any router that you buy today, is WPA2. So this is the one. Years ago, we moved away from the far less secure one that was called WEP to this WPA and then WPA2. So WPA2 is the gold standard. It's the default. You use it, you assume traffic is encrypted, and you know, with a 256 byte key, it can't be decrypted or it can't be hacked. And so everything has been assumed to be totally fine with this. And now we find out that it is remarkably trivial for someone that wants to hack into this, to hack into it. And the way it's done is there's when your device connects to a network, you provide a key for your home network. That's going to be the same key, a shared key, right? Where everybody has the same Wi-Fi password. That's what we all pass around at our houses. In corporate environments, we use a variation on WPA2 called WPA2 Enterprise that allows you to have different keys or passwords for each person. So you'd put in a username and password, but it's all the same WPA2. And that then starts a handshake between the devices to actually do the encryption. And it's a four-way handshake. And one of those ways, message number three, is, I believe, when the group key is exchanged. And at that point, it's actually very easy. That's what this crack thing is. It's very easy to inject another key into that. And then whoever injects that key gets to decrypt all the traffic, presuming that the key they injected, they've got the decryption for.
Okay. So what I'm gathering from this is, what I said before, any device that has Wi-Fi and WPA2 encryption support, which is basically everything.
Basically everything, yes.
Is susceptible to this. So people that like to say, hey, I've got Apple devices, I'm always secure, this isn't an Apple thing, and you are potentially susceptible as well.
Correct. In fact, there was an article that just came out like less than an hour before we started recording this by Sean Gallagher over at Ars Technica, where he dug deeper into it and found that because the short version, he found that both macOS and OpenBSD are some of the easiest ones to hack. Far easier than the original draft of this paper that was submitted sort of privately for review back in May indicated, because of some changes that were made to, I guess, to the OS or maybe to the attack. I didn't dig that deep because we're doing this show. But yeah, everything's susceptible. Your router will need a security update to patch this. And I think thus far, the only companies that have updates ready to go today are Aruba and Ubiquiti. And I believe that's Aruba only makes enterprise grade routers and access points. Ubiquiti makes some consumer grade routers, but I don't think there's an update this morning yet for that on any of their consumer grade stuff. So,
okay. So you just hit on another big question that I'm sure people have, which is there a way to patch this so that it's not a problem going forward? And the answer is yes.
Totally.
And that patch, from what I understand, should be backwards compatible. So any device that can be patched and updated has the potential to be patched and updated, and then the problem goes away.
Yep. And the good news is we know, and when I say we, I mean the industry at large, we know exactly what needs to be done to patch this. It's not like, oh my goodness, we need to figure out how we could maybe possibly solve this problem. Nope. It, like, we know what the problem is. We know where the hole needs to be plugged, but now we need to plug it. And so it will take some time, but hopefully not that long to get these updates out. Vendors are going to want to, you know, run these things through quality control and all of that to make sure that they don't rush out a patch that makes it so that no one can connect to your Wi-Fi network anymore, because that would solve this problem.
Yes.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, I'm going to guess blindly here, and it's not entirely blind, but I'm going to guess that it's going to be probably 2 to 4 weeks before we see the majority of these things patched. And that's fast.
That's fast.
But I think it's a relatively straightforward patch. And I think vendors understand that they have both a moral benefit by patching this, but also a great business benefit, right? Because if you're the last one to patch your stuff, customers are going to remember that you were the last one. And they're also going to remember if you were one of the first ones. So the PR team is on board with this patch too. So, yeah.
Okay. So before
just the fact that we're talking about it here makes it such that these patches will come. And that's, I think, part of the reason we're talking about it is exactly to make you aware, but also, okay, the heat's on. Let's go.
The heat's on. Okay, so before we move on, I know Brian likes to go and write at coffee shops. Well, I do too. But if Brian is working on, say, updates for his novel at his favorite coffee shop, if he enables the VPN on his MacBook Air, is he giving himself sufficient protection from the crack flaw?
So I'm going to poke a hole in your example here just in case somebody misinterprets it. If Brian's sitting at a coffee shop working locally on his MacBook Pro, updating his novel, the best thing Brian can do is to turn Wi-Fi off. He doesn't need it on if that's all he's doing. But if you want to be in, you know, notification ADD central while you're doing these other things locally on your device, then maybe you do want Wi-Fi enabled. And just having Wi-Fi enabled, even with this crack in place, doesn't mean that someone can hack into your computer. It means that they could decrypt the contents of the Wi-Fi packets that you are sending back and forth. That's it. Now, if one of the things you sent to someone while you were at a coffee shop was, hey, if you ever want to connect to my MacBook Pro with file sharing, here's the username and password to use. Well, I mean, you know, you might think I'm on a secured Wi-Fi network, and not every coffee shop is secured. If they don't have a password, it's not encrypted. If they do have a password, it is encrypted, but almost 100% likely of being susceptible to this crack attack. Mm-hmm. So if you had done that, then yeah, you would have. But your iMessages are encrypted end to end. So it doesn't matter the transmission medium. Even if someone can see the packet that's going to someone else, that's still an encrypted blob that even Apple cannot decrypt. It's only the devices at either end. If you were using encrypted email, that too is encrypted on the way. But if you're not using encrypted email, and if you don't know whether you are or not, you are not, then that would be viewable by someone with, you know, the ability to inject this crack attack, which we haven't seen in the wild yet. So that bears repeating. That said, to answer your question finally, yes, a VPN is a good idea when you're out and about on public Wi-Fi, because even without this crack attack, let's say, you know, you're on a network where the Wi-Fi itself is encrypted and you trust the encryption. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, who runs the router? Because whoever runs the router can see your traffic anyway, because it's only encrypted between you and the access point with Wi-Fi encryption. It's not encrypted past that. So if someone has access to plug an Ethernet cable into the access point, in theory, they could then see what those packets look like.
Okay. So
you always want to be on a VPN when you're at a coffee shop.
Okay, so any data that I am encrypting in some fashion already will remain encrypted even with someone using the crack hack.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah, and I know there's all kinds of caveats to this, but generally speaking,
that's right.
Encryption is good.
As long as your encryption is something other than WPA2, like you're using, like I said, iMessage or email encryption, or you're visiting HTTPS websites, or you're wrapping the whole thing in an encrypted VPN, and then it doesn't matter.
Right. Okay. Got it. Cool.
Dave, you're planning on talking about this more on the Mac Geek Gab, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it. John and I will talk about it again on today's Mac Geek Gab, which I think is Mac Geek Gab 679, which will come out this evening, Monday evening.
Awesome. Okay. Well, after Mac Geek Gab comes out, I'm putting a link to it in today's show notes. Nice. So people have an easy way to access that as well.
Sweet. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you for all that information. You rock.
No problem. Right.
Yeah. So, Brian, do I need to be concerned that Apple has to stop making iPhones completely because Qualcomm hates them?
And it's more like Qualcomm is afraid of Apple, I think, would be probably be the better. Well, they may hate them also, but I think fear is the underlying sentiment in the story that you're talking about, which is that Qualcomm complained to Chinese regulators that Apple is violating three non-standards essential patents in with their iPhones, one of which they say covers Force Touch on, or is the 3D Touch? I always forget which is which on iPhone.
The 3D Touch on iPhone, Force Touch
correct.
On trackpad?
Correct.
Yeah, let's go with that. All right, so 3D Touch. My gut feeling is that this is a crapshoot. What they've asked for the Chinese regulators to do is ban both the sale and manufacture of iPhones in China, and that becomes super complicated for China, because China is willing to have, I think it's something, you know, there's like a million, somewhere between a million and 2 million people that at any given moment are involved in the manufacture of Apple supply chain and the supply and the iPhones themselves in China, right? Okay. And that's a lot of people, unless you're China. And while China would not like to see 1 or 2 million people suddenly out of work, if they can help it, that is an area that they would be willing to sacrifice if it was politically necessary. And politically necessary could be something involving a fight with the U.S. government over something, over trade, over politics, over spying accusations, who knows what. And it could also be something along the lines of wanting to simply protect or boost Chinese tech companies. And China would sacrifice all those jobs for Apple in a heartbeat if they felt that that was the best thing to do for whatever particular agenda they were pursuing at that given moment. So that's not a lot of protection for Apple. And the rule of law isn't even necessarily a lot of protection for Apple. Like whether or not Apple is actually violating these patents doesn't necessarily have anything to do with how China would rule on this. I'm not saying that. I mean, it's, you know, like China is increasingly embracing the rule of law when it comes to intellectual property, but sometimes it's when it's convenient. And again, you know, note those either those political agendas that that they might have, or local economic benefits that they might be pursuing. So who knows exactly how China is going to rule? But then I saw one analyst saying, when this story was first reported by Bloomberg, that if Apple were to lose this battle, they would instantaneously capitulate with Qualcomm and make a deal with them, and wouldn't see any disruptions to their to their iPhone supply chain. And all this is, by the way, is about the broader fight between the companies, where Apple is accusing Qualcomm of using unfair licensing demands to basically using a lot of their monopoly power in some of the standard essential patents that are involved in cell phones today. And Apple wants to change the way Qualcomm handles licensing, and Qualcomm does not want to change the way that Qualcomm does licensing.
Which makes sense, because it sounds like Qualcomm has a pretty good deal going for themselves with their licensing deals.
Yeah, Qualcomm makes most of its revenue from the sale of chips, but it makes most of its profits from the licensing its IP.
Okay.
So, right?
Yeah.
And so that's something that's pretty interesting, isn't it? And Apple is, but Qualcomm wants to be able to charge based on this, on the price of a cell phone. Well, guess whose cell phones cost more than everybody else's cell phones?
So, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm interpreting that correctly, that means that Apple would, in essence, pay more to license
for the Qualcomm's same
technology than some other company.
Yeah, for the same chip, or for the same patents that were covered in the use of a chip, Apple feels like basically Qualcomm is taking money from Apple that it didn't earn, and Qualcomm is basically saying, well, this is the way it works, suck it up, buttercup. And the thing is, so far, Apple has actually been winning these. Like when push has come to shove and decisions have been made, Apple has been on the winning side, I think exclusively. I wasn't able to find an example where Qualcomm had beaten Apple in the current round of this fight that's been going on for the last 18 months. So this is why Qualcomm is now trying to play hardball in China. Right. Because if they can get the upper hand in China, especially on the manufacturing, you know, Apple needs to be able to make iPhones to sell them.
That's true.
And if they can get the upper hand on Apple in China, well, it's going to rewrite the rules for the playing field elsewhere in the world, which is everywhere else in the world. So this is high stakes poker. I kind of think of it. I see it as a bit of a Hail Mary from Qualcomm. I don't think they have much of a chance of actually getting the two bands that they want, which would be the sale or manufacture of iPhones in China. I don't think they can get that.
I would be surprised, but I know crazier things have happened.
Apple's statement on this was like just like pure panache. It was like, yeah, whatevs, you know, they haven't won anywhere else. They're not going to win here.
Well, that's Apple.
It's not really, though. That's not really Apple. Apple doesn't normally take a super cocky attitude about serious, you know, they'll say something like Apple, you know, develops technologies and we work very hard and innovation is very important to us, right? They give those sort of like feel good fluff statements, basically saying that you know, we're on the path of righteousness here when it comes to innovation. This was just like, you know, LOL, you know, Qualcomm's got no case.
Oh, I thought you were providing your interpretation, but if they just came right out and that's essentially
That was my interpretation of what they said.
Okay.
But it's pretty close.
That's as you say, that's ballsy.
Yeah. There you have it. It's interesting stuff, huh?
It is. Okay. So I'm not going to lose sleep being concerned that I can't buy an iPhone anymore. But I should still be concerned that Qualcomm could do something or China could do something that could gum up Apple's works at least temporarily.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is like a playground fight between billionaire multinationals, right? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Apple's going to be just fine, and so is Qualcomm. At the end of the day, eventually, at some point, one of those companies is going to be having a little bit less of the other company's money.
And we know which way Apple wants that to go.
Yeah, Apple wants to pay less, but Apple is not wanting to not pay. Apple just wants to basically not be shafted for being able to sell a cell phone.
Right. They should
more than everybody else.
They shouldn't be able to. They shouldn't be charged more for the same part. But if their contract says that they can, then they can. So they need to renegotiate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget, Apple got to the point where they just said, we're not going to pay you royalties anymore until we get this sorted out.
Which does create an incentive on Qualcomm's part to get this sorted out.
Except for the fact that
it's a lawsuit.
Qualcomm. Yeah, actually, it's a lawsuit that has happened.
Right.
But Apple hasn't been made to pay. That's right. I mean, you know, Apple knew what it was doing when it took that particular negotiating stance. It's a negotiating tactic. We're just not going to pay you. So, you know, the courts are going to end up deciding this. Regulators are going to end up deciding this. It's not the situation in China isn't going to be the last of it, just like it wasn't the first of it. And I'm guessing my feeling is that Qualcomm is not going to get what it wants from China. But that it was a bold gambit on Qualcomm's part.
All right. Well, then I'm going to assume that the only real problem I'm going to have getting an iPhone 10 at the end of the month will be the limited availability we're hearing about already.
Yeah, I would imagine that none of the stuff that Qualcomm just filed in China would move fast enough to have any effect whatsoever on the iPhone 10 rollout. As you mentioned, it's merely all the other problems Apple is having with the iPhone 10.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. We're out of time. Brian, thank you for being here.
Absolutely, man. Good time. Good stuff. And I enjoyed learning all about the crack.
I had a feeling you would. Yep. Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me. Fun as always.
Oh, yes. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.